And now, continuing our series of complete performances of the operas of Gilbert and Sullivan, we present Patience, or Bunthorne's Bride, a satire on the aesthetic movements of the period. The scene is the exterior of Castle Bunthorne, approached by a drawbridge over a moat. A group of young ladies, dressed in aesthetic draperies, are playing lutes and mandolins. They are in the last stages of despair.
Magic in this love of ours, rivals as we all are in the affections of our Reginald, the very hopelessness of our love is a bond that binds us to one another.
Jealousy is merged in misery. While he, the very cynosure of our eyes and hearts, remains icy and sensible, what have we to strive for?
The love of maidens is to him as interesting as the taxes.
Oh, would that it were. He pays his taxes.
And cherishes the receipts.
Happy receipts.
Fools!
Oh!
Fools!
I beg your pardon?
Fools and blind. The man loves, wildly loves.
But whom? None of us?
No, none of us. His weird fancy has lighted, for the nonce, on Patience, the village milkmaid.
On Patience? Oh, it cannot be.
Poh. But yesterday I caught him in her dairy, eating fresh butter with a tablespoon. Today he's not well.
But Patience boasts that she has never loved, that love is to her a sealed book. Oh, he cannot be serious.
'Tis but a fleeting fancy. 'Twill quickly pass away. Oh, Reginald, if you but knew what a wealth of golden love is waiting for you, stored up in this rugged old bosom of mine, the milkmaid's triumph would be short indeed.
happiness.
But the truly happy always seem to have so much on their minds. The truly happy never seem quite well.
There is a transcendentality of delirium, an acute accentuation of supreme ecstasy, which the earthy might easily mistake for indigestion. But it is not indigestion. It is aesthetic transfiguration. Enough of babble. Come.
But stay. I have some news for you. The 35th Dragoon Guards have halted in the village and are even now on their way to this very spot.
Oh. The 35th Dragoon Guard? They are fleshly men of full habits.
We care nothing for Dragoon Guards.
But bless me, you were all engaged to them a year ago.
A year ago?
My poor child, you don't understand these things. A year ago, they were very well in our eyes. But since then, our tastes have been etherealized, our perceptions exalted. Come, it is time to lift up our voices in morning carol to our Reginald. Let us to his door.
And so the ladies leave, and their place is taken by a detachment of the 35th Dragoon Guards, the objects of the ladies' former passions, attired in their magnificent uniforms of gold and scarlet. With them is their commanding officer, Colonel Calverley.
For that popular mystery known to the world as a heavy dragoon. Take all the remarkable people in history, rattle them off to a popular tune. The pluck of the Velsen on board of the Victory, genius of Bismarck devising a plan, the humor of Fielding which sounds contradictory, coolness of Paget about to trepan, the science of Julian, the eminent musical wit of Macaulay who wrote to Queen Anne, the pathos of Paddy as rendered by Boussico, style of the Bishop of Soda and Man, the dash of a Dorsey divested of quackery, narrative powers of Dickens and Thackeray, Victor Emmanuel, Picantic Peveril, Thomas Aquinas and Dr. Sacheverell, Tupper and Tennyson and Daniel Defoe, Anthony Trollope and Mr. Guizot. Take up these elements, all that is fusible, melt them all down in a pipkin or crucible, set them to simmer and take up the score. And a heavy dragoon
is the residue.
Want to seat for this soldier like Paragon. Get at the wealth of the Tsar, if you can. The family pride of a Spaniard from Aragon. Force of Mephisto pronouncing a ban. A smack of the water, the reckless and rollicky swagger of Roderick heading his clan, the keen penetration of Paddington Pollocky, grace of an odalisk on a divan, the genius strategic of Caesar or Hannibal, skill of Sir Garnet in thrashing a cannibal, flavor of Hamlet, the strange or a touch of him, little of Manfred, but not very much of him, Beadle of Burlington, Richardson, Cho, Mr. Micawber, and Madame Tussaud. Held them all down in a pinky or crucible. Set them to simmer and take out the scum. And the heavy dragoon is a lazy gun.
Well, here we are once more on the scene of our former triumphs. But where's the Duke?
Here I am.
No, come cheer up. Don't give way.
Oh, for that, I'm as cheerful as a poor devil can be expected to be, who has the misfortune to be a duke with 1,000 a day.
Most men would envy you.
Envy me? Tell me, Major, are you fond of toffee?
Very. We are all fond of toffee.
We are.
Yes, and toffee in moderation is a capital thing. But to live on toffee. Toffee for breakfast, toffee for dinner, toffee for tea. To have it supposed that you care for nothing but toffee. And that you would consider yourself insulted if anything but toffee were offered to you. How would you like that?
I can quite believe that under those circumstances even toffee would become monotonous.
For toffee, read flattery, adulation, and abject deference. Carried to such a pitch that I began at last to think that man was born bent at an angle of 45 degrees. Great heavens! What is there to adulate in me? Am I particularly intelligent or remarkably studious?
No.
Or excruciatingly witty or unusually accomplished or exceptionally virtuous?
You're about as commonplace a young man as ever I saw.
Exactly. That's it, exactly. That describes me to a T. Thank you all very much.
No, not at all. Not at all, my dear.
Well, I couldn't stand it any longer, so I joined this second-class cavalry regiment.
What?
In the army, thought I shall be occasionally snubbed, perhaps even bullied. Who knows? The thought was rapture, and here I am.
Yes, and here are the ladies.
But who is the gentleman with the long hair?
I don't know.
He seems popular.
He does seem popular.
The gentleman in question is the aesthetic Bunthorne. He is apparently oblivious to everything except the poem he is composing. The ladies languish in his train and ignore the dragoons, to their annoyance.
Die for love of thee, 20 loves
my book I seem to scan in a rapt, ecstatic way, like a literary man who despises female clay. I hear plainly all they say, 20 lovesick maidens they.
Did you hear plainly all they say, 20 lovesick maidens they?
Though so excellently wise, for a moment mortal be, deign to raise thy purple eyes from thy heart-drawn poesy. 20 lovesick maidens see, each is kneeling on her knee.
20 lovesick maidens see, each is kneeling on her knee.
Though, as I remarked before, anyone convinced would be that some transcendental law is monopolizing me. Round the corner I can see, each is kneeling on her knee.
Round the corner I can see, each is kneeling on her knee. Now is not this ridiculous, and is not this preposterous, a power of this absurdity, ridiculous, preposterous, explain it if you can. Now is not this ridiculous, and is not this preposterous, a power of this absurdity, explain it if you can.
Bunthorn, he has come over us. He has come among us, and he's idealized us.
Has he succeeded in idealizing you?
He has.
Oh, good old Bunthorn.
My eyes are open. I droop despairingly. I'm soulfully intense. I am limp, and I cling.
Finished at last. Finished.
Are you better now?
Yes, I am better now. The poem is finished and my soul had gone out into it. That was all. It was nothing worth mentioning. It occurs 3 times a day. Ah, Patience!
Oh!
Dear Patience.
Oh, sir.
Will it please you read it to us, sir?
This we supplicate.
Shall I?
No.
I will read it if you bid me, Patience.
You can if you like.
It is a wild, weird, fleshly thing, yet very tender, very yearning, very precious. It is called Oh Hollow, Hollow, Hollow.
Is it a hunting song?
A hunting song? No, it is not a hunting song. It is the wail of the poet's heart on discovering that everything is commonplace. To understand it, cling passionately to one another.
Oh.
And think of faint lilies.
Oh.
What time the poet hath hymned the writhing maid, lithe-limbed, quivering on amaranth in asphodel, how can he paint her woes, knowing as well he knows that all can be set right with calomel? When from the poet's plinth the amorous colocynth yearns for the aloe, faint with rapturous thrills, how can he hymn their throes, knowing as well he knows that they are only uncompounded pills? Is it, and can it be, nature hath this decree, nothing poetic in the world shall dwell? Oh, that in all her works something poetic lurks, even in colocynth and calomel. I cannot tell.
How purely fragrant.
How earnestly precious.
Well, it seems to me to be nonsense.
Nonsense, yes, perhaps. But oh, what precious nonsense.
This is all very well, but you seem to forget that you're engaged to us.
It can never be. You are not Empyrean. You are not Delacruscan. You are not even Early English. Oh, be Early English ere it is too late.
Red and yellow, primary colours. Oh, South Kensington.
We didn't design our uniforms, but we don't see how they could be improved.
No, you wouldn't. Still, there is a cobwebby grey velvet with a tender bloom like cold gravy, which made Florentine 14th century, trimmed with Venetian leather and Spanish altar lace and surmounted with something Japanese. It matters not what. Would at least be Early English. Come, maidens.
A uniform that has been as successful in the courts of Venus as on the field of Mars. When I first put this uniform on, I said, as I looked in the glass, it's one to a million, and any civilian my figure and form will surpass. Gold lace is a charm for the fair, and I've plenty of that and to spare. For a lover's professions, but art and hessians are eloquent everywhere. A fact that I counted upon when I first put this uniform on.
A simple coincidence you could never have counted upon. The same thing occurred to me when I first put this uniform on.
I said when I first put it on, it is plain to the various dunce that every beauty will feel it a duty to yield to its glamour at once. They will see that I'm freely gold-laced in a uniform handsome and chaste. But the peripatetics who long hair aesthetics are very much more to their taste, which I never counted upon when I first put this uniform on.
By a simple coincidence you could never have counted upon. I didn't anticipate that when I first put this uniform on.
Unobserved, I am. Then let me own I'm an ascetic sham. This air severe is but a mere veneer. The cynic's smile is but a wile of guile. This costume chaste is but good taste misplaced. Let me confess, a languid love for lilies does not blight me. Lank limbs and haggard cheeks do not delight me. I do not care for dirty greens by any means.
I do not long for all one sees that's Japanese. I am not fond of uttering platitudes in stained glass attitudes. In short, my medievalism's affectation, born of a morbid love of admiration. If you're anxious for to shine in the high aesthetic line as a man of culture rare, you must get up all the germs of the transcendental terms and plant them everywhere. You must lie upon the daisies and discourse in novel phrases of your complicated state of mind. The meaning doesn't matter if it's only idle chatter of a transcendental kind. And everyone will say, as you walk your mystic way, if this young man expresses himself in terms too deep for me, why, what a very singularly deep young man this deep young man must be. Be eloquent in praise of the very dull old days which have long since passed away, and convince them if you can that the reign of good Queen Anne was culture's palmiest day. Of course you will poo-poo whatever's fresh and new and declare it's crude and mean, for art stops short in the cultivated court of the Empress Josephine. And everyone will say, as you walk your mystic way, if that's not good enough for him, which is good enough for me, why, what a very cultivated kind of youth this kind of youth must be. Then a sentimental passion of a vegetable fashion must excite your languid spleen. An attachment a la Plato for a bashful young potato or a not too French French bean. Though the Philistines may jostle you, will rank as an apostle in the high aesthetic band. If you walk down Piccadilly with a poppy or a lily in your medieval hand. And everyone will say, as you walk your flurry way, if he's content with a vegetable love, which would certainly not suit me, why, what a most particularly pure young man this pure young man must be. Ah, patience, come hither. I am pleased with thee. The bitter-hearted one who finds all else hollow is pleased with thee. For you are not hollow, are you?
No, thanks. I have dined.
Oh.
But I beg your pardon. I interrupt you.
Life is made up of interruptions. The tortured soul yearning for solitude writhes under them. Oh, but my heart is aweary. Oh, I am a cursed thing. Don't go.
Really, I'm very sorry.
Tell me, girl, do you ever yearn?
I yearn my living.
No, no. Do you know what it is to be heart-hungry? Do you know what it is to yearn for the indefinable and yet to be brought face to face daily with the multiplication table? Do you know what it is to seek oceans and to find puddles? To long for whirlwinds and yet to have to do the best you can with the bellows? That's my case. Oh, I am a cursed thing!
Oh, dear.
Don't go.
If you please, I don't understand you. You frighten me.
Don't be frightened. It's only poetry.
Well, if that's poetry, I don't like poetry.
Don't you? Can I trust her? Patience, you don't like poetry.
No?
Well, between you and me, I don't like poetry. It's hollow, unsubstantial, unsatisfactory. What's the use of yearning for Elysian fields when you know you can't get 'em? Would only let 'em out on building leases if you had 'em.
Sir...
Patience, I have long loved you. Let me tell you a secret. I am not as bilious as I look. If you like, I will cut my hair.
There is more innocent fun within me than the casual spectator would imagine. You have never seen me frolicsome. Be a good girl, a very good girl, and one day you shall. If you are fond of touch-and-go jocularity, this is the shop for it.
Sir, I will speak plainly. In the matter of love, I am untaught. I have never loved but my great aunt. But I am quite certain that under any circumstances, I couldn't possibly love you.
You think not?
I'm quite sure of it. Quite sure. Quite.
Very good. Life is henceforth a blank. I don't care what becomes of me. I have only to ask that you will not abuse my confidence. Though you despise me, I am extremely popular with the other young ladies.
I only ask that you will leave me and never renew the subject.
Certainly. Broken-hearted and desolate, I go. Oh, to be wafted away from this black Aceldama of sorrow, where the dust of an earthy today is the earth of a dusty tomorrow. It's a little thing of my own. I call it heartphone. I shall not publish it. Farewell, patience. Patience. Farewell.
What on earth does it all mean? Why does he love me? Why does he expect me to love him? He's not a relation. It frightens me.
Why, Patience, what is the matter?
Lady Angela, tell me two things. Firstly, what on earth is this love that upsets everybody? And secondly, how is it to be distinguished from insanity?
Poor blind child. Oh, forgive her, Eros. Why, love is of all passions the most essential. It is the embodiment of purity, the abstraction of refinement. It is the one unselfish emotion in this whirlpool of grasping greed.
Oh, dear. Oh!
Why are you crying?
To think that I have lived all these years without having experienced this ennobling and unselfish passion. Why, what a wicked girl I must be. For it is unselfish, isn't it?
Absolutely. Love that is tainted with selfishness is no love. Oh, try to love. It really isn't difficult if you give your whole mind to it.
I'll set about it at once. I won't go to bed until I'm head over ears in love with somebody.
Noble girl. But is it possible that you have never loved anybody?
Yes, one.
Ah, who?
My great aunt.
Great aunts don't count.
Then there's nobody. At least, no, nobody. Not since I was a baby. But that doesn't count, I suppose.
I don't know. Tell me all about it.
Long years ago, 14 maybe, when but a tiny babe of four, another baby played with me, my elder by a year or more. A little child of beauty rare, with marvelous eyes and wondrous hair, who in my child eyes seemed to me all that a little child should be.
Thank you.
dreadful to think of the appalling state I must be in. I had no idea that love was a duty. No wonder they all look so unhappy. Upon my word, I hardly like to associate with myself. I don't think I'm respectable. I'll go at once and fall in love with a stranger.
Pretty, pretty maiden, pretty, tell me true. Hey, but I'm no fool, will away. Have you e'er a lover dangling after you? Hey, I would fain discover if you have a lover. He will away.
Gentle sir, my heart is frolicsome and free. Hey, but he's doleful. Will away. Nobody I care for comes a courting me.
Recognize me?
Recognize you? No, indeed I don't.
15 years so greatly changed me.
15 years? What do you mean?
Have you forgotten the friend of your youth? Your Archibald? Your little playfellow? Oh, Kronos, Kronos, this is too bad of you.
Archibald? Is it possible? Why, let me look. It is. It is. It must be. Oh, how happy I am. I thought we should never meet again. And how you've grown.
Yes, Patience, I'm much taller, much stouter than I was.
And how you've improved.
Yes, Patience, I am very beautiful.
But surely that doesn't make you unhappy.
Yes, Patience, gifted as I am with a beauty which probably has not its rival on earth, I am nevertheless utterly and completely miserable.
Oh. But why?
My child love for you has never faded. Conceive, then, the horror of my situation when I tell you that it is my hideous destiny to be madly loved at first sight by every woman I come across.
But why do you make yourself so picturesque? Why not disguise yourself, disfigure yourself, anything to escape this persecution?
No, Patience, that may not be. These gifts, irksome as they are, were given to me for the enjoyment and delectation of my fellow creatures. I am a trustee for beauty, and it is my duty to see that the conditions of my trust are faithfully discharged.
And you, too, are a poet.
Yes, I am the apostle of simplicity. I am called Archibald the All Right, for I am infallible.
And is it possible that you condescend to love such a girl as I?
Yes, Patience, is it not strange? I have loved you with a Florentine 14th century frenzy for full 15 years.
Oh, marvellous! I have hitherto been deaf to the voice of love. I seem now to know what love is. It has been revealed to me. It is
Archibald Grosvenor.
Yes, Patience, it is.
We will never, never part.
We will live and die together.
I swear
it. We both swear it.
But, oh, horror.
What's the matter?
Why, you are perfection. A source of endless ecstasy to all who know you.
I know I am. Well?
Then, bless my heart, there can be nothing unselfish in loving you.
Merciful powers, I never thought of that.
To monopolize those features on which all women love to linger, it would be unpardonable.
Why, so it would. Oh, fatal perfection, again you interpose between me and my happiness.
Oh, if you were but a thought less beautiful than you are.
Oh, would that I were. But candor compels me to admit that I am not.
Our duty is clear. We must part, and forever.
Oh, misery! And yet I cannot question the propriety of your decision. Farewell, Patience.
Farewell, Archibald. But stay.
Yes, Patience.
Although I may not love you, for you are perfection, there is nothing to prevent your loving me. I am plain, homely, unattractive.
Why, that's true.
The love of such a man as you, for such a girl as I, must be unselfish.
Unselfishness itself!
Though to marry you would very selfish be.
Hey, but I'm doleful, willow, willow, way.
You may all the same continue loving me.
Patience and Grosvenor depart in opposite directions. A procession of maidens appears and are soon joined by the dragoons. The young ladies are dancing a classical dance and playing cymbals, double pipes, and other archaic instruments. They are leading Bunthorn, who is crowned with roses and hung about with garlands. He looks very miserable.
Unfortunate one!
Then tell us, we pray you, why thus they array you? Oh, go and tell.
I'll tell you what is it you've done.
Heartbroken at my patience's barbarity, by the advice of my solicitor, in aid of a deserving charity, I put myself up to be raffled for.
By the advice of his solicitor, is what you tell him to be raffled for.
Oh, harder! That's why his solicitor is put himself up to be raffled.
You see before you the men to whom you're plighted.
Stay before you, for we adore you. To us you're plighted, to be united. Stay, we implore you.
Your maiden hearts are do not steal to pity's eloquent appeal. Such conduct British soldiers feel. Sigh, sigh, oh sigh. To foam and steel we rarely see a British soldier bend the knee. Yet one and
avidity, overcome your diffidence and natural timidity. Tickets for the raffle should be purchased with avidity. Put in half a guinea and a husband you may gain. Such a judge of blue and white and other kinds of pottery, from early oriental down to modern terracottery. Put in half a guinea, may draw him in a lottery. Such an opportunity may not occur again.
Such a judge of blue and white and other kinds of pottery, from early oriental down to modern terracottery. Put in half a guinea, you may draw him in a lottery. Such an opportunity may not occur again.
And are you going a ticket for to buy?
Most certainly I am. Why shouldn't I?
Oh, fortune that is hard. Blindfold your eyes. 2 minutes will decide who wins the prize.
Just raise your bandage, boss, that you
come, Lady Jane. I pray you draw the first.
He loves me best.
I want to know the worst.
A ticket. Take a dozen.
For the maidens experience a sudden revulsion for aestheticism. The colonel, duke, and major find themselves united with their loves while the other ladies gaze fondly at the other dragoons.
Rejoice, for the lost said, "Till we share." godlike grace proclaims he comes of noble race. And who is this whose manly face bears sorrow's interesting trace?
Yes, who is this whose godlike grace proclaims he comes of noble race?
I am a broken-hearted troubadour, whose mind's aesthetic and whose tastes are pure.
Aesthetic? He is aesthetic?
Yes, yes, I am aesthetic and poetic.
Soliloquizes, accompanying herself on the double bass. Meanwhile, the maidens, whom we can hear in the distance, have, in spite of their promises of constancy to their dragoons, transferred their attentions to Grosvenor, and are following him as they once followed Bunthorne.
The fickle crew have deserted Reginald and sworn allegiance to his rival. And all, forsooth, because he has glanced with passing favor on a puling milkmaid. Fools! Of that fancy he will soon weary. And then I, who alone am faithful to him, shall reap my reward. But do not dally too long, Reginald, for my charms are ripe, Reginald, and already they are decaying. Better secure me ere I've gone too far. ¶¶
dim her eyes. Compelled at last, in life's uncertain gloamings, to wreathe her wrinkled brow with well-saved combings, reduced with rouge, lip salve, and pearly grey. To make up for lost time as best she may.
but the old, old tale. How rapturously these maidens love me, and how hopelessly. Oh, patience, patience. With the love of thee in my heart, what have I for these poor mad maidens but an unvalued pity? Alas, they will die of hopeless love for me, as I shall die of hopeless love for thee.
Sir, will it please you read to us?
Yes, child, if you will. What shall I read?
One of your own poems.
One of my own poems? Oh, better not, my child. They will not cure thee of thy love.
Mr. Barnthorne used to read us a poem of his own every day.
And to do him justice, he read them extremely well.
Oh, did he so? Well, who am I that I should take upon myself to withhold my gifts from you? What am I but a trustee? Here is a decanet, a pure and simple thing, a very daisy. A babe might understand it. To appreciate it, it is not necessary to think of anything at all.
Let us think of nothing at all.
Gentle Jane was as good as gold. She always did as she was told. She never spoke when her mouth was full, or caught blue bottles their legs to pull, or spilt plum jam on her nice new frock, or put white mice in the 8-day clock, or vivisected her last new doll, or fostered a passion for alcohol. And when she grew up, she was given in marriage to a first-class earl who keeps his carriage.
Oh.
I believe I'm right in saying that there is not one word in that decollete which is calculated to bring the blush of shame to the cheek of modesty.
Not one. It is purity itself.
Here's another. Teasing Tom was a very bad boy. A great big squirt was his favorite toy. He put live shrimps in his father's boots and sewed up the sleeves of his Sunday suits. He punched his poor little sister's heads and cayenne peppered their four-post beds. He plastered their hair with cobbler's wax and dropped hot halfpennies down their backs. The consequence was he was lost totally and married a girl in the corps de ballet.
Oh, mark, too, how grandly, how relentlessly the damning catalogue of crime strode on till retribution, like a poisoned hawk, came swooping down upon the wrongdoer. Oh, it was terrible.
Oh, sir, you are indeed a true poet. Few touch our hearts, and they go out to you.
Oh, this is simply cloying. Ladies, I'm sorry to appear ungallant, but this is Saturday, and you've been following me about ever since Monday. I should like the usual half-holiday. I shall take it as a personal favour if you will kindly allow me to close early today.
Oh, sir, do not send us from you.
Poor, poor girls. It is best to speak plainly. I know that I am loved by you, but I never can love you in return, for my heart is fixed elsewhere. Remember the fable of the magnet and the churn.
But we don't know the fable of the magnet and the churn.
Don't you? Ooh, then I will sing it to you.
A magnet hung in a hardware shop, and all around was a loving crop of scissors and needles, nails and knives, offering love for all their lives. But for I and the magnet felt no whim. He charmed I, and he charmed not him. From needles and nails and knives he turned, for he'd set his love on a silver churn.
A silver churn.
A silver churn. He's most aesthetic, very magnetic. Fancy took this turn. If I can wheedle a knife or a needle, why not a silver churn?
He's most aesthetic, very magnetic, fancy took this turn. If I can wheedle a knife or a needle, why not a silver churn?
And iron and steel express surprise. The needles opened their well-drilled eyes. The penknives felt shut up, no doubt. The scissors declared themselves cut out.
kettles they boiled with rage to set. While every nail went off its head, and hither and thither began to roam, till a hammer came up and drove them home.
It drove them home.
It drove them home. While this magnetic, peripatetic lover, he lived to yearn, by no endeavor can magnet ever attract a silver churn.
While this magnetic, peripatetic lover, he lived to learn, by no endeavor can magnet ever attract a silver churn.
At last they're gone. What is this mysterious fascination that I seem to exercise over all I come across? Oh, a curse on my fatal beauty, for I am sick of conquests.
Archibald!
Patience!
I have escaped with difficulty from my Reginald. I wanted to see you so much that I might ask you if you still love me as fondly as ever.
Love you, if the devotion of a lifetime...
Hold! Unhand me or I scream! If you are a gentleman, pray remember that I am another's. But you do love me, don't you?
Madly, hopelessly, despairingly.
That's right. I never can be yours, but that's right.
And you love this Bunthorn?
With a heart-whole ecstasy that withers and scorches and burns and stings. It is my duty.
Admirable girl. But you're not happy with him.
Happy? I am miserable beyond description.
That's right. I never can be yours, but that's right.
But go now. I see dear Reginald approaching. Farewell, dear Archibald. I cannot tell you how happy it has made me to know that you still love me.
Oh, if I only dared.
This language to one who is promised to another. Oh, Archibald, think of me sometimes, for my heart is breaking. He is so unkind to me, and you would be so loving.
Loving.
Advance one step, and as I am a good and pure woman, I scream. Farewell, Archibald. Stop there. Think of me sometimes. Advance at your peril. Once more. Adieu.
Crying, eh? What are you crying about?
I've only been thinking how dearly I love you.
Love me, bah!
Love him, bah!
Don't you interfere.
He always crushes me.
What is the matter, dear Reginald? If you have any sorrow, tell it to me, that I may share it with you. It is my duty.
Whom were you talking with just now?
With dear Archibald.
With dear Archibald. Upon my honour, this is too much.
A great deal too much.
Do be quiet.
He's crushed again.
I think he is the noblest, purest, and most perfect being I have ever met. But I don't love him. It is true that he is devotedly attached to me. But indeed, I don't love him. Whenever he grows affectionate, I scream. It is my duty.
I dare say.
So do I. I dare say.
Why? How could I love him and love you too? You can't love two people at once.
No, can't you, though?
No, you can't. I only wish you could.
I don't believe you know what love is.
Yes, I do. There was a happy time when I didn't. But a bitter experience has taught me.
Love is a plaintive song. By a suffering
everything has gone wrong with me since that smug-faced idiot came here. Before that, I was admired. I may say loved.
Too mild. Adored.
Do let a poet soliloquize. The damosels used to follow me wherever I went. Now they all follow him.
Not all. I am still faithful to you.
Yes, and a pretty damosel you are.
No, not pretty. Massive. Cheer up. I will never leave you, I swear it.
No, thank you. I know what it is. It is confounded mildness. They find me too highly spiced, if you please. And no doubt I am highly spiced.
Not for my taste.
No, but I am for theirs. I will show the world that I can be as mild as he. If they want insipidity, they shall have it. I'll meet this fellow on his own ground and beat him on it.
You shall, and I will help you.
You will? Jane, there's a good deal of good in you after all.
Him and say to him with compliment ironical,
sing hey to you, good day to you, and that's what I shall say.
Your style is much too sanctified, your cut is too canonical.
Sing bar to you, ha ha to you, and that's what I shall say.
I was the beau ideal of the morbid young aesthetical. To doubt my inspiration was regarded as heretical, until you cut me out with your placidity emetical.
Sing boo to you, poo poo to you, and that's what I shall say. Sing boo to you, poo poo to you, and that's what I shall say.
Sing hey to you, good day to you,
good
sing
day
to you, ha ha to you, sing boo to you, poo poo to you, and that's what you should say. Sing hey to you, good day to you, sing boo to you, ha ha to you, sing boo to you,
and that's what I should say. Boo, boo, and that's what I should say. Boo, boo, and that's what I should say. Tell him that unless he will consent to be more jocular.
Say poo to you, poo poo to you, and that's what you should say.
To cut his curly hair and stick an eyeglass in his ocular.
Sing ba to you, ha ha to you, and that's what you should say.
To stuff his conversation full of cripple and of quiddity. To dine on chopped and roly poly pudding with avidity. He better clear away with all convenient rapidity.
Sing hey to you, good day to you, and that's what you should say.
Sing boo to you, poo poo to you, and that's what I shall say.
Sing hey to you, good day to you,
good day
to you, ha ha to you, sing boo to you, poo poo to you, and that's what you should say. Sing hey to you, good day to you, sing boo to you, ha ha to you, sing boo to you,
and that's what I should say. And that's what I should say. And that's what I should say.
Meanwhile, aestheticism has invaded the army. The Duke, Colonel, and the Major, together with their colleagues, determined to win back their ladies, have abandoned their uniforms and are dressed as aesthetics, walking in stiff, constrained, angular attitudes.
It's clear that Betty in Ballant alone retains its zest. To charm and please his devotees, we've done our little best. We're not quite sure before we do as the early English ring, but as far as we can judge, it's something like this sort of thing. You hold yourself like this, you hold yourself like that. By hook and crook, you try to look both angular and flat. We venture to expect that what we recollect, though but a part or two by art, will have its due effect. If this is not exactly right, we hope you won't upgrade. You can't get high aesthetic taste like trousers ready made. True views on many things a tie alone will bring, but as far as we can judge, it's something like this sort of thing. You hold yourself like this, you hold yourself like that.
By hook and crook you try to look both angular and flat, to cultivate the trim rigidity of limb. You want to get a marionette and form your style on him.
Chance of making a lasting impression on these young ladies is to become as aesthetic as they are.
No doubt. The only question is how far we've succeeded in doing so. I don't know why, but I have an idea that this attitude is not quite right.
I don't like it. I never did. I don't see what it means. I do it, but I don't like it.
My good friend, the question is not whether we like it, but whether they do. They understand these things, we don't. Now, I shouldn't be surprised if this is effective enough. At a distance.
I can't help thinking we're a little stiff at it. It'd be extremely awkward if we were to be struck so.
I don't think we shall be struck so. Perhaps we're a little awkward at first, but everything must have a beginning. Ah, here they come. Tension!
Oh, Sapphire! See! The immortal fire has descended on them, and they are of the inner brotherhood, perceptively intense and consummately utter.
How Botticellian! How Fra Angelican! Oh, Art, we thank thee for this boon.
I'm afraid we are not quite right.
Not supremely, perhaps, but oh, so all but. Oh, Zephyr, are they not quite too all but?
They are indeed jolly utter.
I wonder what the inner brotherhood usually recommend for cramp.
Ladies, we'll not deceive you. We are doing this at some personal inconvenience with a view of expressing the extremity of our devotion to you. We trust that is not without its effect.
We will not deny that we are much moved by this proof of your attachment.
Yes, your conversion to the principles of aesthetic art in its highest development has touched us deeply.
And if Mr. Grosvenor should remain obdurate,
which we have every reason to believe,
I wish they'd make haste.
We are not prepared to say that our yearning hearts will not go out to you.
By sections of threes. Rapture. Rapture!
Oh, it's extremely good. For beginners, it's admirable.
The only question is, who will take whom?
Oh, the Duke chooses first, as a matter of course.
Oh, I couldn't think of it. You're really too good.
Nothing of the kind. You are a great matrimonial fish, and it's only fair that each of these ladies should have a chance of hooking you.
If Saphir I choose to marry, I shall be fixed up for life. Then the colonel need not tarry, Angela can be his wife.
In the case unprecedented, single I shall live and die. I shall have to be contented with a heart for sympathy.
He will have to be contented with a heart for sympathy.
In that case unprecedented, single, he shall live and die. He will have to be contented with a heart for sympathy.
He will have to be contented with a heart for sympathy.
He shall have to be contented with a heart for sympathy.
If an Angie I determine, at my wedding she'll appear, decked in diamond and ermine, Major then can take Saphir.
In that case unprecedented, single, I shall live and die. I shall have to be contented with a heart for sympathy.
He shall have to be contented with a heart for sympathy.
In that case unprecedented, single, he will live and die.
He will have to be contented with a heart for sympathy.
He will have to be contented with a heart for sympathy.
He will have to be contented with a heart for sympathy.
After
some debate internal, if on neither I decide, Sapphire then can take the kernel, and she be the major's bride. In that case unprecedented, single I must live and die, I shall have to be contented with a heartfelt sympathy.
He will have to be contented with a heartfelt sympathy. In that case unprecedented, single he will live and die, he will have to be contented with a heartfelt sympathy. He will have to be contented with a heartfelt sympathy. He will have to be contented with a heartfelt sympathy.
It's very pleasant to be alone. It's pleasant to be able to gaze at leisure upon those features which all others may gaze upon at their goodwill. Oh, I am a very Narcissus.
It's no use. I can't live without admiration. Since Grosvenor came here, insipidity has been at a premium. He is there.
Ah, Bunthorn, come here. Look, very graceful, isn't it?
Bah, I'm in no mood for trifling.
What is amiss?
Ever since you came here, you have entirely monopolized the attentions of the young ladies. I don't like it, sir.
Oh, my dear sir, how can I help it? They're the plague of my life. My dear Mr. Bunthorn, with your personal disadvantages, you can have no idea of the inconvenience of being madly loved at first sight by every woman you meet.
Sir, until you came here, I was adored.
Exactly, until I came here. That's my grievance. I cut everybody out. I assure you, if you could only suggest some means whereby, consistently with my duty to society, I could escape these inconvenient attentions, you would earn my everlasting gratitude.
I will do so at once. However popular it may be with the world at large, your personal appearance is highly objectionable to me.
It is. Oh, thank you, thank you. How can I express my gratitude?
By making a complete change at once. Your conversation must henceforth be perfectly matter-of-fact. You must cut your hair and have a back party.
Beg pardon?
A back party, sir. In appearance and costume, you must be absolutely commonplace.
No, pardon me, that's impossible.
Take care. When I am thwarted, I am very terrible.
I can't help that. I am a man with a mission, and that mission must be fulfilled.
I don't think you quite appreciate the consequences of thwarting me.
I don't care what they are.
Suppose, I won't go so far as to say that I will do it, but suppose for one moment I were to curse you. Ah, very well then, take care, take care.
But surely you would never do that.
I don't know. It would be an extreme measure, no doubt. Still...
But you would not do it. I'm sure you would not. Oh, reflect, reflect. You had a mother once.
Never.
Then you had an aunt. Ah, I see you had. By the memory of that aunt, I implore you to pause ere you resort to this last fearful expedient. Oh, Mr. Bunthorne, reflect, reflect.
I must not allow myself to be unmanned. It is useless. Consent at once, or may a nephew's curse
hold. Are you absolutely resolved?
Absolutely.
Will nothing shake you?
Nothing. I am adamant.
Oh, very good. Then I yield.
Ah, you swear it.
I do, cheerfully. I've long wished for a reasonable pretext for such a change as you suggest. It's come at last. I do it on compulsion.
Victory! I triumph!
When I go out of door, of damosels a score, or sighing and burning and clinging and yearning will follow me as before. I shall with cultured taste distinguish gems from paste, and high little will rank as a niddle if I pronounce it jaste.
A most intense young man, a soulful eyed young man, and not a poetical, super aesthetical, out of the way young man. Conceive me if you can, an everyday young man, a commonplace type with a stick and a pipe and a half red black and tan. Who thinks suburban hops more fun than Monday pops? Who's fond of his dinner and doesn't get thinner on bottled beer and chops?
A commonplace young man, a matter-of-fact young man, a steady and solidly jolly bank holiday everyday young man.
A Japanese young man, a blue and white young man, fresh as good a rimini, mimini, timini, je ne sais quoi young man.
A Chancery Lane young man,
a Somerset House young man, a very delectable, highly respectable threepenny bus young man.
A padded and thin young man, a haggard and lank young man, a greenery gallery, grove in a gallery, foot in the grave young man.
A Sewell and Cross young man, a Howell and James young man, a pushing and particle, what's the next article, Waterloo House young man. Conceive me if you can, a matter of fact young man, an alphabetic, charismatic, everyday young man. Conceive me if you can, a matter of fact young man, an alphabetic, charismatic, everyday young man.
It's all right. I have committed my last act of ill nature, and henceforth I'm a changed character. When I go out of door, of damsels or scores,
Reginald! Dancing? And what in the world is the matter with you?
Patience, I am a changed man. Hitherto I've been gloomy, moody, fretful, uncertain in temper, and selfish in disposition.
You have indeed.
All that is changed. I have reformed. I have modelled myself upon Mr. Grosvenor. Henceforth I'm mildly cheerful. My conversation will blend amusement with instruction. I shall still be aesthetic, but my aestheticism will be of the most pastoral kind.
Oh, Reginald! Is all this true?
Quite true. Observe how amiable I am.
But, Reginald, how long will this last?
With occasional intervals for rest and refreshment, as long as I do.
Oh, Reginald, I'm so happy. Oh, dear, dear Reginald, I cannot express the joy I feel at this change. It will no longer be a duty to love you, but a pleasure, a rapture, an ecstasy.
My darling.
Oh, horror!
What's the matter?
Is it quite certain that you have absolutely reformed? That you are henceforth a perfect being? Utterly free from defect of any kind?
It is quite certain. I have sworn it.
Then I never can be yours.
Why not?
Love, to be pure, must be absolutely unselfish. And there can be nothing unselfish in loving so perfect a being as you have now become.
But stop a bit. I don't want to change. I relapse. I'll be as I was. Interrupted.
I'm a Waterloo House young man, a Sewell and Cross young man, a steady and solidly jolly bank holiday every day young man.
Angela, Ella, Safia, what does this mean?
It means that Archibald the All Right cannot be all wrong. And if the All Right chooses to discard aestheticism, it proves that aestheticism ought to be discarded.
Oh, Archibald, Archibald, I'm shocked, surprised, horrified.
Oh, I can't help it. I'm not a free agent. I do it on compulsion.
This is terrible. Go. I shall never set eyes on you again.
Oh, I say.
But, oh, joy.
What's the matter?
Is it quite certain that you will always be a commonplace young man?
Always have sworn it.
Why, then, there's nothing to prevent my loving you with all the fervour at my command.
Well, that's true.
My Archibald.
My patience.
Ah!
Crushed again.
Shut up. I'm still here. I have never left you, and I never will.
Thank you, Jane. After all, there is no denying it. You're a fine figure of a woman.
My Reginald.
My Jane.
Ladies, the Duke has at length determined to select a bride.
I have a great gift to bestow. Approach such of you as are truly lovely. In personal appearance, you have all that is necessary to make a woman happy. In common fairness, I think I ought to choose the only one among you who has the misfortune to be distinctly plain.
Oh.
Jane.
Oh.
Duke. Crushed again.
After much
debate internal, I and Lady Jane decide. Sapphire now may take the colonel, and she be the major's bride.
In that case, unprecedented single, I must live and die. I shall have to be contented with a tulip all in line.
We will have to be contented with a tulip all in line. In the case of precedented single, he must live the night. He will have to be contented with a tulip on the line. Take a place for one another to get married with a son. Each of us will make it on the whole day.
In that recorded performance of Patience by W.S. Gilbert and Arthur Sullivan, the cast was as follows. Colonel Calverley was sung by Donald Frankie and spoken by Jack May. Major Murgatroyd was sung by Leslie Fison and spoken by Frederick Treves. The Duke of Dunstable was sung by Duncan Robertson and spoken by John Wood. Reginald Bunthorne was played by Peter Pratt. Archibald Grosvenor was sung by Derek Hammondstroud and spoken by Andrew Sachs. Lady Jane was sung by Pamela Bowden and spoken by Joyce Grant. Patience was sung by Pamela Woolmore and spoken by Prunella Scales. Lady Angela was sung by Shirley Minty and spoken by Elizabeth Morgan. Lady Ella was sung by Ursula Connors and spoken by Pamela Binns. Lady Sapphire was sung by Patricia Clark and spoken by Shirley Cooklin. The Lovesick Maidens and the 35th Dragoon Guards were the John McCarthy singers, and you also heard the BBC Concert Orchestra leader Arthur Levins. The performance was conducted by Stanford Robinson and produced by Michael Moores and Peter Bryant. Derek Hammond Stroud broadcasts by permission of Sadler's Wells Opera Company.